make sure we hit this record button. That's very important.
It could have opening B-roll stuff.
Lol and Lamau. Oh, I think maybe Henzi is my blood trick. Like, I'm Henzi posting.
You're Henzi. Okay, well then, hey, there you go. That works.
We finally got there.
I'm like, there's got to be a card that does the thing, you know?
Except Henzi, I think, is way more popular than your guy, so I have way less hipster cred. My stony winged monstrosities, welcome to Actually They're Grotesques, the number one podcast for the discussion of the animated television series Gargoyles.
I didn't sign up for this. I didn't even watch Gargoyles as a kid. What is this?
No, we're not doing that. It's the Heroes Blade 5 Check podcast, gamers. Hello, Cole. What the fuck is up, gamers? Tell everybody what we're getting up to today. Or how it is, and you know,
this is already a disaster, and I love it. From the start of the call to this, it's been amazing. But hey, we're back. It's another week. We're not doing any crazy intros this time. Like,
except
I've already
for that one.
Except for that one. But like, no musical differences, no like crazy cold open, no overly edited stuff. We're just going for a few regular episodes in a row for the near future, just so we don't mess things up. So yeah, let's get into it. First things first, we're going to talk about some community responses, because that's just how we start this podcast. We asked, I'm totally not social media manager for everything. We asked the question on both Twitter and on Spotify. We asked different questions. On Spotify, I had asked, what future brews pass the vibe check? Or the Grafted War Gear check? Which, it doesn't seem like anyone took the Grafted War Gear check prompt. So sorry, Benoit. We'll get him next time. Spotify reactions to that were from Brayden and Claire. Brayden said, I know it's a ways out, but all spoiled legends in Bloomborough look like they pass. Bria, Burek, Luma, and Mabel all want to progress the game through meaningful reduction of life totals. Otter hype.
Otter hype, extremely. I'm so hyped that homegirls like Otter and Prowess, like, hello, yes, blue-red spells that also care about the big punch. That's extremely my jam, and I would love to put a hero's blade on that.
They do know their audience, and this time they're like, we can make an otter that will not get instantly banned by the rules committee.
You can just play that otter, gamers, it's fine. Just put her in the 99 and be like, hey, this is my cute dual caster mage. Are we, like, gonna be cool and normal about that in the 99 of my deck? And it's fine, I promise.
Most likely. Yeah, as long as you're not abusing that poor otter at every twist and turn. Claire here says Saravok Deathbringer is an old card, but Hero's Blade on 2 will allow him to be on 4. Oh, geez. Okay, hold on. The phrasing's really weird. Okay. Hero on 2 to allow him to be on 4 mana, to be 6 power to drain. And if you have the Cultist of the Absolute, it's 9. So to make sure the life totals go down regardless of attack step. So yeah.
Claire, you kind of spin with this one.
Yeah. So Saravok Deathbringer from Baldur's, the Battle for Baldur's Gate Commander Legends set, is 3 and a black for 3/4 Human Knight. The beginning of each player's end step, if no permanents left the battlefield this turn, that player loses X life, where X is Saravok's power. With the choose a background, and in this case have Cultist of the Absolute. So you're always sacrificing stuff on your turn, so you're not getting hit. and it's much less of a guarantee unless if someone's playing an Aristocrats thing. But yeah, that seems neat.
Yeah, I'm extremely into that, and also obligatory. Baldur's Gate mentioned. Woo.
Woo. Okay. Check mark there. Check mark there. Awesome. Let's pop on over for Twitter. Changed it up a little bit there. Excuse me. We put out a thing. I'm gonna keep saying I'm like ratting myself out doing this.
No, it's true. You're the social media manager.
I'm doing my best here. I had asked the question, what deck do people have that they believe has the vibe check? And then in particular, which version of a Hero's Blade would you prefer in a deck? Because we have the Khonsa Tarkir version, which has the fancy sword with like the red ribbon at the end of it. And then we have the, here's the obligatory Doctor Who mentioned, Doctor Who version, which I believe, what is that, the second Doctor or the third Doctor? I got no idea.
I don't know about old Who that much, so that one's lost on me, but I do greatly enjoy the look of a sword like that.
Yeah. We got a bunch of, we had quite a few responses here, which I thought was pretty great.
Zynum. Yeah, we got some fucking opinions.
Yeah, so Zynum was looking at it from an art style standpoint. The traditional one goes in Azure Oaks, Exynil, and then in theory, an Arden and Crom partner deck.
Okay, yeah, I'm into
which
that.
I thought was pretty neat. The right one would go into a deck like Rafik, Balin, or Miri Weatherlight Duelist.
Oh, you're so right, dude. Yeah, absolutely.
So, yeah, that considering that, like, even in Miri's case, being a duelist, yeah, that seems pretty awesome. Trenton, once again, coming in, saying, please do not ever play the Doctor Who version against me.
Oh, Trenton, sweetie.
I love this. I love this take.
It's not.
I think it looks really tacky, but that's just me, and that's okay. And at the moment, he is vibing. As he says, he's vibing with this magnificent lady called the Archimandrite, I believe.
Oh, yeah, dude, she's so cool.
Yeah. Two blue, red, white for human advisor. That's a 0/5. At the beginning of your upkeep, you gain X life, where X is the number of cards in your hand, -4. Whenever you gain life, each advisor, artificer, and monk you control gain vigilance and gets +X/+0 until end of turn, where X is the amount of life you've gained. Then you can tap 3 untapped advisors, artificers, and or monks you control to draw a card. Yeah. That seems pretty awesome.
Yeah, I'll take a free +3 on that.
Yeah, going to from a 0/5 to a 3/7 defensive behemoth, all the while you're untapping and probably tapping a bunch of your artificers and advisors, and especially your monks, and then punching face. Yeah, I don't think I've ever seen this commander hit the battlefield before, so since Trenton's playing it, I'm certainly hoping to hear more and see more about it.
I've seen it. I've played against the Archimandrite precisely one time, and it was a very cool deck. Didn't really see it coming until sort of the like late game, and then just like all of the synergy worked together at once in a very large combat step with a lot of life gain and a fuck huge hand size. It was lit.
Yeah, Jeskai, once again, getting some pretty banger legends the last couple of years.
Yeah. Also, is this an Owling Mind deck? Could you do that?
Well, I was going to say, because if there's if it's equal to your hand size -4, it does kind of sound like it.
You can play your secret rendezvous and your cut of deals and smuggler shares and all of that kind of thing. Get back to me on that, gamers. If somebody out there builds the Archimandrite as like an Owling Mind deck, I want to hear about it.
Owling Mind posting immediately. we got Sketchy here. Asking us to vibe check Rex Cyberhound.
Mm-hmm.
One white and a blue for a 2/2 robot dog all the way from New Vegas. Whenever Rex deals combat damage to a player, They mill two cards and get two energy, and then you can pay two energy. So you can choose target creature card in the graveyard. You exile it with a brain counter. And then Rex has all activated abilities of all cards in exile with brain counters on them. Sketchy mentioned was like, vibe check this weird dog that keeps making infinite mana. I don't know much about the, like, infinite mana part. But in terms of wanting to ensure you clear the way to have Rex get you 2 energy on an attack, yeah, I'd say Rex probably passes the vibe check in terms of, like, allowing you to get in there with a 5/4.
R.E. the infinite mana, it's just that you can exile things that have activated abilities that generate mana and untap itself to generate more mana. And there's a whole suite of artifacts that you can entomb to do that, and then you just pay energy, get the things, do the things.
Hmm. Okay. But yeah, I think Rex passes the vibe check in terms of, like, if you are turning Rex sideways to get some of this energy stuff going, then, like, for sure.
Yeah, you gotta make sure that you deal combat damage if you're going to, air quotes, fairly do this thing.
Yes, if you want to quote-unquote fairly do it. Let's see here. Get Lefty, a.k.a. Ben, is saying Zyrus the Writhing Storm passes the vibe check.
My brain about exploded when I considered the implications of Zyrus picking up the Hero's Blade. Holy shit, you draw so many more cards, and it's a free equip, which is always nice, and you're just fucking bonking people in the air. Like, Cyrus already has that evasion. Like, this is happening.
It's you know, like, I've seen a few Cyrus decks, but it's just that in terms of, like, if you want low to the ground, easy, passive buffs, there's probably a few ways to do it, especially in green, but, like, yeah, get that 6/7 flying snake leviathan out of my face, please. Do not come at me.
If you have a Zyrus deck that plays Rune Flare Trap, tag me on Twitter. I want to see it.
There we go.
Hashtag Owling Mind Posting.
This is coming from MJ of the MTG in Quarantine podcast as part of our conversation that we'll have over something we'll go over in a bit here. But during our conversation, he has... Or has, because I guess he hasn't played it in about 3 years. He has a Widwin the Biting Gale deck that already had the Hero's Blade in it from when he made it over a few years ago. Mm-hmm. So Widwin is a... Oh no, why is this not working? Oh, there we go. Okay, perfect. Widwin the Biting Gale is a 2 blue and a black 3/3 fairy wizard with flash and flying where you pay... blue and a black, and 1 life to return Widwin to your hand. Now, apparently, this deck was such a menace in MJ's playgroup from over 3 years ago that he would do super awesome blocks, like Fanta block anything that didn't have trample, and mm-hmm. then be able to replay her like the same turn or at the end step, and then just go right back to just smacking people out. Has cranial plating in the deck. Hero's Blade was apparently like a no-brainer. And Inquisitor's Flail is like also in the deck. So it was just like this Demir Voltron deck.
So
in terms of tech and application and everything, oh yeah, this thing passed the vibe check.
Flying colors.
This was pretty sweet to hear about. And then he's like, and now it's just forever on my shelf. And I'm like, that's a shame. You should bust it out again.
I don't know, sometimes it's nice to hang a Dex jersey up. Just yeah. Like, you were a real one.
Will I take it apart? Never. Will I play it again?
Never. Debatable.
So yeah, we have Cascadia Carnage on Twitter here, saying that obviously the preferred equipment is the original printing of Hero's Blade with the original artwork, and his preferred equipment commander in his Karn the Betrayer deck.
Yo.
Our Karn the Betrayer from Warhammer 40K. 3 and a red for 5/1 is Astartes Berserker. Must attack or block each turn if able, and when you lose control of Karn, you draw two cards. And then if damage would be dealt to Karn the Betrayer, prevent that damage, and an opponent of your choice gains control of it. Now, obviously, this, of course, could backfire on you if Karn were to perhaps turn the Hero's Blade towards you. But also, letting loose an 8-3... basically nearly indestructible Karn upon the table. Yeah, that seems pretty neat.
I'm extremely into that.
Yeah. So hey, Joel, if you ever listen to this episode, Joel aka Enthrallment, put a Hero's Blade in. We'll see what happens, right?
Yeah, give that a thought.
And then finally, just the last one for community engagement. Thank you, everyone, so far. We have Cody from Brewer's Screw It saying that he did have it in his original list for Minsk and Boo Timeless Heroes, which absolutely was one of the Planeswalkers from, once again, Battle for Baldur's Gate, where one of the modes is that when Minsk and Boo Timeless Heroes enters, or at the beginning of your upkeep, you create a legendary Boo token, which is a 1/1 hamster with a trampster and haste. Holy fuck. Yeah, I don't know what's going on today. Trample and haste. So immediately you make a 4/3. And then you can either use the +1 on Minsk and Boo to put +1/+1 counters on a target creature with trample or haste. Or you can sacrifice a creature, deal damage to any target where X is that creature's power, and then if it was a hamster, you draw X cards. So you're immediately, every turn, you are making a 4/3 that you can just huck at people's faces. Well, okay, you can't do the second ability all the time, but you are drawing a bunch of cards and you are dealing.
I mean, you can if you have a strong proliferate package, but I think the plan is probably to put counters on your hamster so that you have +6 to your 1/1, and then you're just yeeting 7 wherever you want.
It's good. It's a good investment.
That seems really strong.
So, yeah, hey, this is why we're doing the podcast, everyone. This is just sweet. So, yeah, Cody, thank you for submitting this. Excellent vibe checks, everyone.
Yeah, so great work, gamers.
Now let's get into our own for this week's episode. What you got going on, Quinn?
Got a shout out, Excel Scion of Atraxa. She passes the vibe check. Let's grab her here.
Hold on. How fast can this thing load before
it? I got it.
Dang it. All right, I didn't even spell it right.
2/5 flying vigilance, toxic 2, legendary creature, Phyrexian Angel for 1, white, black, green. And she's got Corrupted. At the beginning of your end step, each opponent who has 3 or more poison counters exiles the top card of their library face down. You may look at and play those cards for as long as they remain exiled, and you may spend mana as though it were mana of any color to cast those spells. So the game plan with her is, at least the way that I have the deck built, Abzan Poison Control, and I am trying to get in there for combat damage in the air for, obviously, for, like, killing you, but mostly so that I can, you know, gently caress my friends with the touch of Phyrexia and put the poison counters on them and then, like, sit back and proliferate and drown them in ichor. And if I've got the Hero's Blade, it makes it way easier to attack and block, because she's just already fucking massive, and that attack buff and her toughness, sweet. So I'm thinking about adding that in there.
It's very similar to my Aldedon Sky strategy of making giant evasive and defensive body come at me if you dare, and most people are like, I do not want to attack that. That seems, I think I'm good to pass.
Yeah, it's exactly that.
Yeah, no, that for 5/7 flying Phyrexian Angel. Yeah, it seems good.
Yeah, that sounds like another one of those that we know about.
Oh, geez, which one, the Atraxa or the Atraxa?
Great question. Anyway, what do you have for us?
I got a couple this week. One of which kind of is part of Bruise that we'll be talking about later this episode.
Worm?
Started off, Thrix the Sudden Storm passes the vibe check. You know, an evasive 5-mana, 4/5 giant, elemental giant that has flash and flying and then reduces the cost of your 5-mana spells by 1 and gives them protection from most counter spells. Yeah, it just works really well. I haven't played that deck in a while because it's very heavy in control and can be really frustrating when you start looping that instant speed extra turn spell that shuffles back into your deck.
Oh, Nexus of Fate, Cole, how could you?
You can't counter it, and it costs 6 mana. It's great.
Cole,
but I would
no.
Listen, I don't play that deck a whole lot anymore, but there's a good reason for it, but I'll bust
turn
it out.
Turn spells should exile themselves.
They should, but not this one, and then I'll just do it again and again. Anyway.
Dying. That's why I have that in my binder. It's in quarantined. It's out of circulation. Nobody else can buy it.
Yeah, no one can have that one.
I'm doing my part.
You're doing the world a favor.
Locking one Nexus of Fate away so that nobody else could use that particular copy.
Oh my god. and then my other one here is one that will be part of story time later. Craig Boone, Novak Guard, passes the vibe check, defensively being a lifelink reach of 6/5. Great offensively and defensively, especially while I'm accumulating quest counters on him.
Yeah, he seemed really cool, especially the like direct burn damage like mini game that you get to play. So mm-hmm. I'm looking forward to hearing about that.
We will get to that in due time. Let's get into content. I haven't done a whole... This one feels a little skimpy. You know, hey, I've been listening to a bunch of podcasts. Go listen to your favorite Magic podcast, whoever that may be. This one's really funny because it kind of goes... It's let's Bludgeric post a little early, again, as usual, but we always be Bludgeric posting. So Kuratsuki, your boy, was out away on work, like working out of town, so he didn't have his regular setup, but he's like, hey, I'm gonna do just a spontaneous deck review stream, and we'll, you know, see what the deck's about and see what we would change or take out or blah, 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 right? So everyone immediately was like throwing their lists, and I was like third in line, and I threw my list to him, and I'm like, I gotta know what he thinks, right?
Mm-hmm.
So he goes through the first two, and then he's like, all right, Audric Bloodcursed. And he's, at this point, is, like, sleep-deprived. he has no idea what he's reading. He thought, Audric this, the red-white Audric was Audric Lunark Marshall.
Nope.
So he gets to Dan Lewis, before I took Dan Lewis on the list, we'll go over that a bit later. And he's just like, so, where's the artifacts? And everyone in chat's like, you'll give him a minute. And then he got to Arterial Alchemy, and he's like, I still don't get it. What's going on here? And he's like, bro, I don't know what you're cooking. And then everyone's like, read Audric. And he reads it. He's like, okay, so you make X blood tokens equal to keywords. He's like, no, I still don't know what you're cooking, dude. I'm just like... I was dying. I wasn't even, like, offended or anything, and I knew he was, like, tired. And I was just laughing, because he's just like, dude, I don't get it. So I'll put a link...
He's not blessed by the light of Avacyn. He doesn't see the vision.
Yeah, so he, he's like, yeah, I mean, you played it on my stream before, I don't get it. I'm like, it's okay. But also, it is really funny that you're just standing there, just staring at it, and, like, that just goes to show how absolutely deep I'm into that deck. Like, mm-hmm. I'm thinking in 4D chess on my own deck, and everyone's like, what is this guy fucking smoking? Like, what is going on? So,
what was he cooking?
Yeah, so, I will put a link to that for as long as the VOD, the VOD or the VOD is up, and it will be the timestamped link, So I'll drop just right in before he starts doing the review as you have me in chat trying to, like, walk him through it. And everyone's like, no, no, no. Let him guess. Let him figure it out as he's like, no, I don't get it, man. What have you read or seen or done lately?
Kristen Emily at Narukami Knight on Twitter with the underrated cards for Commander article. The main thing that I wanted to mention there, like, she's got a lot of pretty good mentions in there, but I in particular enjoyed the mention of Sword of War and Peace. Mm-hmm. It is probably my favorite of the Sword of X and Y cycle. Well, I haven't tried that new sword from Medea, the big score yet, so I'm judgment reserved on that one, but I do very highly rate Sword of War and Peace because Runeflare Trap, Sudden Impact, Unquenchable Fury, Vicious Shadows, all of those hand-sized burn related effects are just generally good, and in this case you also get to gain life for the cards in your hand.
Wait, so a minute, gaining life? Who are you? Who am I speaking to? This is my co-host.
I'm not saying that I can't ever gain life. I'm saying if you're playing aggro or burn, you need to turn off life gain or they'll time walk you. That's just mechanically how that works.
So it's okay if you time walk us?
Well, yeah, I have to not die. It's your job to turn off life gain if you don't like it. That thing tilts me into the sun, so I pack hate pieces for it. If you don't like it, pack hate pieces for it.
Yes, the logic is sound. It just makes sense.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I am a big I'm also a big fan of Sword of War and Peace, just mostly because of players who keep an exorbitant amount of cards in their hand, especially if they have, you know, Reliquary Tower or Infinite.
Oh yeah, they'd be out there with the Reliquary Tower and the Thought Vessel and the Decanter of Endless Water, and I'm just like, you're not even using all of those cards. You could have discarded to hand size, and you know what, gamers? Just fucking Sword of War and Peace them about it.
Yeah, now, hey, you could say, but why would you, pro red and pro white, listen, if you're playing against me, you know you gotta have that thing on you, because mm-hmm, mm-hmm. I will Blasphemous Hack your port.
Gamers are out here playing white mana for the card draw these days, and so you can pretty reliably be like, I'm going to need to get through some creatures that are in those colors. It's come in handy, like I promise.
Yeah. But yeah, that list that Kristen had is pretty great. Bond of Discipline was there, and Gesserai Monk, once again for battle, for Baldur's Gate. Get that flash and flying.
You have gotten my ass with Gesserai Monk before.
Oh, I have. And you're like, Cole, how could you do this to me? And I'm like,
into the sun, completely bricked my combat.
You're like, I'm going to attack you. I'm like, no, you're not. You're like, can't have fucking shit around here.
I'd like to announce my intent to go to combat. And here comes Cole with the, before we do that.
We cast an instant speed stuff at instant speed on other people's turns here.
You hate to see it. This Sometimes. Is why I got a Conqueror's Flail, just to start playing that more. I actually did add one to the War Doctor, because I've fucking had it. I had it with people thinking they get to say what happens on my turn.
I remember the tweet that you just put out of being like, laser beams your face with the War Doctor, and then everyone said no. And you said, no, 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 I'm doing this now, so you can't actually do that. But well, I guess we'll just have to wait and see. And just to kind of wrap up content here, the episode is officially out of Signature Decks with MJ over on MTG and Quarantine. We just talked about what does it mean to have, like, either have a signature deck that you put a lot of investment in, or signature decks that you perceive of other people. And yeah, I'm talking about Audric Bloodcursed, obviously. What else would I be talking about?
Of course.
And yeah, it was a good time. It's about an hour long, so, you know, you can watch a much shorter episode and then come listen to this. And yeah, and then MJ talks about his history with his Kothaped Soul Hoarder deck.
Love that guy.
Which, what a cool demon. You know, you're like, but all these treasures and stuff. And he's like, I can work
whatever.
With that.
Just die about it.
Yeah. Kill me then. Do it. You know? But yeah, that was a good time. So go check that out. Yeah, let's talk about games and brews and stuff. What's up with you?
Yay. So I played a game with my Wooburg Enchantress Reanimator deck against this Ragodraga deck my friend built with no lands. It's just like a funny bit to see what was possible. And gamers, yeah, that deck actually does have legs. You can just play fast mana and mana dorks.
What the fuck?
Yeah. You do have to mulligan kind of aggressively, but if all your cards are good, it's fine. Your limitation ends up just being card draw, and as sort of a thing to keep the power level appropriate, because, you know, she is on a bunch of fast mana, she didn't put a bunch of access to card draw in that. So I am a fucking clown and did not take that into consideration at the start of the game, because my Enchantress Reanimator deck is also kind of an Owling Mind deck. So my win conditions are hand size burn and forcing cards into people's hands. So I have Forced Fruition, and I had that on the field, and I just reanimated it, and we already had a Vicious Shadows in play. So, like, the statement of intent is clear. You're going to cast some spells, and if you slip up and make a creature die, you're going to get fucking lasered.
That's a problem.
So we pass the turn. And it's Ragadraga's turn, and Homegirl untaps and casts a Thought Vessel and draws 7 cards. And I'm just like, you really don't want no max hand size, I promise you. And Homegirl casts another spell and draws 7 more cards. And is just eyes widening with the potential of all of the free spells that she can cast. And also, it clicks what Vicious Shadows means for her life total if she continues down this path.
Oh, jeez.
And so Homegirl resolves to either kill me or die trying. And so she casts a bunch of fucking spells, and finally, on her last draw 7, with 0 cards left in library, finds Craterhoof Behemoth.
Oh my god, yes! Oh my god, that's amazing.
And all the time she's been casting large spells like Chromatic Orrery sized things, so she's getting the Ragadraga trigger, and there's this fucking Birds of Paradise that's getting +7, +7.
Who knew the bop would be the one?
Every time this happens. And so she goes to combat, takes my ass out with the fucking large Birds of Paradise, and I am just so tilted at myself because we had a Swords to Plowshares in hand and didn't leave up white mana.
You know what? I could have saved myself another game the other day because I had Swords to Plowshares. No, it was Path to Exile. I did have the mana up, and I could have saved myself, but for whatever reason, I was just like, nah, I'm good to die. And then afterward, I looked at my hand and I was like, I did not properly realize what was going on. It feels bad.
Like that sometimes. Oh, man. Sometimes you just fucking get caught. #drownsecrets.fm.
Yeah. Hey, can we get some more submissions for that? Thank you. We need to get that started back up.
We'll get it eventually.
Slowly but surely.
Yeah. So that's what happened there. Gamers, you gotta be careful about the cards that you put in your deck and maybe be prepared to die to them because someone's gonna try.
For sure, yeah. If you give someone enough incentive, if you have blood feuds with like 100 people in the community, they'll make sure that you're going down, and then you'll lose.
100%. It do indeed happen like that.
Oh, that's funny. I gotta love that.
Yeah. All right, so you got some Bloodrick posting for me?
I wasn't sure if I wanted to start with that, because that one could go on for a while. I just kind of wanted to go through... I wanted to go through the small things first.
We'll warm up to it.
We'll warm up. So, I didn't play my Inquisitor Eisenhorn deck in the last little bit, but I have been updating it, especially... With the addition of Piper Wright, because she also makes clue tokens, and then whenever you sack a clue token, you can put +1 counters on your stuff, which I thought was pretty great. And then I was like, okay, but I don't like the name Demure Inquisition, you definitely saw it coming, because I'm like, I never really watched, oh, fuck, and I'm blanking.
The source material, it just feels like you're copying a thing that you saw online.
Yeah, you know, I'm like, I never really watched Monty Python, and I'm sure I'm never gonna hear the end of that, but I haven't watched, like, a bunch of stuff.
Yeah, whatever.
Yeah, I know, you're the perfect example of someone who hasn't watched a bunch of stuff.
I've never seen a single movie, and it's literally getting
away with it every time. but I was like, okay, I do need to sit down and rename it, and I just sat there and I looked at it, and I looked at the cards, and I thought about the concept, and I'm like, Inquisitor Eisenhorn, Piper Wright, there was just a detective set, and I settled on the title, the UB Investigation Agency.
Mm-hmm.
Because
like Blue-Black Investigation Agency, but also Universes Beyond Investigation Agency.
That is correct. That is the dad joke of the day.
You nerd. Well done.
I'm actually proud of it. I do love that deck. I do love that deck quite a lot. Not as much as Ardric Blood Curse, because like, you'd have to be amazing to do that. But it's a pretty good deck and a pretty fun deck. Of the games I've had, heck, just this weekend, I played Sir Conrad for the first time in a long time. As usual, Sir Conrad is busted. All I did was sit there with Sir Conrad out, and I was advancing the game state through the meaningful reduction of life totals by other people sacrificing their creatures. And I was like, great,
gonna do something here. My husband is truly so good at his job.
I did lose, but it was funny just being like, yeah, you know, I'll cast Soul Shatter here, or I'll do this, or I'll do that. You killed Sir Conrad, I guess I'll just reanimate, or I didn't reanimate him, I recast him. And yeah, like, I think I did, like over 20 some odd damage just with him just existing.
You gotta hit Conrad with the scam cards, the Not Dead After Alls, the Malkier Rebirths.
Yeah, but my deck doesn't really do that. I did tune it a little bit, but I just like reanimating the big stuff that are in that deck. And then speaking of other decks that I haven't played in a while and then decided to bust out for this weekend, I brought out Neheb the Eternal. let me just take a look at my super awesome spreadsheet that is helping me remember my games.
Sure is a statement of intent.
March 16th, Neheb, who is a dark green color on my list here, which means it's a good deck and I'll keep it around, but it is not my quote-unquote favorite deck, which is in blue tier. Mm-hmm. It was a three-player game. I need to check out what this one commander was, but one person was playing Merkel, Lord of Bones.
Mm-hmm.
And the other one was playing that new red, black, Pied Piper rat dude.
Oh, from Totendons.
Yeah. You know, these are fairly tuned decks all their own. Mm-hmm. However, it didn't fucking matter. Cause from turn zero, I already was looking at my hand and being like, this is kind of gas. And then I drew Heartless Hitetsugu. At some point, I had the Phyrexian Kavu that reduces your spells by one red if you pay two life instead.
Mm-hmm.
So I had that out. I had Neheb the Eternal out. I put out Heartless Hitetsugu with a Luxodon Warhammer on being put on right afterward.
Oh no.
And I just was just smoking everyone's life totals, and then I played some big fuck off red spell that just burned everyone to death, and then
Neheb just walking away from a fucking smoldering crater that your opponents are weakly giving you a thumbs up from.
Yeah, well, they would. One of them was like, "This is bullshit, Cole. What the fuck? You bringing this? They're like this. I can't believe this. God, I need to go play in the other pod. This is ridiculous. Can you all save me from this?" And I'm like, "Ryan, you gotta calm the fuck down, dude." But no, it was really, it was pretty bad. It was probably just a prime example of just. A failed Neheb rule.
Is a really strong card, and you really gotta come correct if they're gonna put that in the command zone.
So, as I said that day, I'm like, and Neheb's going right back up on the shelf.
Hang his motherfucking jersey up.
You know, he's like, man, all right, I dusted off the Lazatep plating, and now we're just gonna make you collect some more. But yep. Yeah, just kind of proven why it's kind of like one of those kind of forever higher power deck. And just doing the good work, just burning people to death.
And they keep printing new and exciting ways to burn your opponents for a little bit so that you can generate Nahab mana, and he's just never going to not be a fucking powerhouse in the command zone.
Yeah. I need to properly update the Moxfield list, because I think there was even a few new cards that I put in there. But yeah, it was just like, oh, I'm going to do this. And they're like, so how much damage is it? I'm like, oh, you know, not zero. They're like, great, good. But yeah, Nahab the Eternal. Go figure.
Shout out to Nahab the Eternal.
What's up with you? What else is up?
So I finally put together the Ishin Two Heavens as one deck.
Mm-hmm. Yes, mm-hmm. I'm excited for it.
I sent you a screenshot. It was like a picture of the deck list, and we have Ishin, there's an Obosh next to it, and in the highlighted, like, card section, we have the guy from fucking Clue that goads a thing on attack, the Frenzied Gore Spawn. So that guy's an attack trigger for each opponent. Oh, no, sorry. It's when it enters the battlefield for each opponent, go target creature that player controls, and then whenever one or more creatures attack one of your opponents, those creatures gain menace until end of turn. So, yeah, that's what we got here. I got some guys that say go and have odd mana values and some attack triggers, and the impetus cycle is a really, like, strong exemplifier of what the deck is about.
Yeah, you finally had that Mardu goad deck that you wanted.
Yeah, I wanted the Mardu goad deck, and I wanted an Ishin deck, and now here we are. So there we go. And I played a game with it, and I got real close to victory off of the backs of other people's creatures, which was extremely cool and what we built the deck to do. There was an Essex Fractal Bloom that I was like, you know, that's a 4/4 flyer that you probably had no intention of attacking with.
Mm-hmm, yeah.
It'd be a shame if it were to be enchanted with a parasitic impetus.
Yeah.
So I just throw that enchantment on it. We give it +2/+2, and it trains its controller for 2. On attacks, and so I'm just like, I'll burn you for 4 and I'll gain 4, and you have a 6/6 with flying that you're legally mandated to swing with. So that felt good.
That's pretty awesome.
Yeah. We also had Obosh out there who actually turns out we need to... I was thinking I would have to protect Ishin more because he's the attack harmonicon, but no, it's actually Obosh that you need to, like... You really need to protect her because...
Yeah, that is not surprising. I don't know how many times I've seen Obosh get fucking sent to the Shadow Realm.
Yeah, people do not like to see a indestructible or just like anything that's like damage modifying with any sort of like safety protection measures on it. So you need to make sure that you get them on there. I had an enchantment that goads the enchanted creature but also gives it indestructible, I think Redemption Arc. The intention for that card is probably to put it on something else.
But something else, yeah.
You know what? I needed the protection for Obosh, so we made her indestructible with that, and then she's legally mandated to swing every turn, but what do I care? She's indestructible, and I'm not going to push the exile the enchanted creature button.
Yeah, I think, yeah, no. I do find it great that, like, if you are really in a pinch... that you can turn those effects, like, on your own creatures to be like, well, I'm not attacking myself, and I don't mind if this thing attacks, so go get him!
A really cool piece in the deck is Descent into Avernus, of course. Obosh doubled the damage in the game that we played, and we got very close to dying to Avernus Descented as well. But before we could get to my turn for the Descent to go off, Miriam and Temur Ascendancy were able to cast a bunch of spells and make a bunch of dragons.
Well... That's what Miriam do.
Yeah. I have been seeing her a little bit more because I've got a different metagame with some, like, newer players. Mm-hmm. And they're experiencing the, like, full wide range of what Magic the Gathering has to offer for, like, the first time. And so picking up cards like Miriam or whatever is like, that's fine. I'll just build something that's appropriate for that. And it's fun to jam cards like Ishin, who is sort of that same tier of, like, power level of Commander. Because Attack Harmonicon, extremely strong.
Yeah, I was... Because when you hit me with the Obosh restriction, it kind of got me thinking. And then in looking at your list and your intent, especially when you have Irelia, the Law Above, with Karazakar and all that other stuff. And I'm like, oh, this is a necessary restriction because of just how powerful this could all be if left unchecked.
Yeah, if we just had a regular damage doubler in the 99 and didn't bother with the Obosh Companion, we could be playing, like, Hellrider and all of that nonsense.
Yeah, I will do that on my end with my Ishin deck, and,
Yeah, I'm putting the, like, a weighted training cape on.
Still, Obosh is cool. I do need to figure out... I did have a Torwaki the Younger and Obosh deck at one point, but it just didn't quite mesh with what I wanted out of it. But also, I think Torwaki the Younger kind of does need a bit of some kind of training wheels, because otherwise you're just going to be doing, like, Judith, the new Judith kind of stuff.
Yeah. Gotta pack those damage modifiers. I also think a lot of the same game plan that at least I was going about with the Torwaki, you can just put that in the Rowan Scion of War deck.
Yeah. Because
I was just doing the Rakdos Spellslinger thing, and it was a storm game plan without really like casting burn spells. Mm-hmm. So we just put that under Rowan and then like did the Rakdos Storm thing way more efficiently.
So yeah, still going to be very interesting to see where you go with that. And hey, you made a Mardu deck. Good job.
Yeah, mission accomplished. And I do really enjoy the color pairings or color trio, whatever. I like that color combination.
You like the wedge. There you go.
Yeah.
Avernus Descented.
Yeah, I got the little pray hands emoji.
All right, it's Bloodrick time. Let's talk about it.
Hell yeah.
So, I'm just gonna go back a little bit to the Crowhead Suki stream thing, because just, you know, it's one of those things where it's like, it is very interesting to sit down and have someone kind of review your work and be like, you know, hey, your ramp's a little lacking and this and that, and I'm like, okay, well, I should probably take that in consideration, you know, like, I do run 36 lands, and I do run 36 lands on average for, like, most of my decks, regardless of, like, their color combination.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm like, alright, so maybe adding another land might help, but maybe not, so I'll think about that. I knew I needed to make cuts, and I knew some things weren't really working out, and I'm like, okay, the Blood Sword angle ain't gonna be working out.
Aw, it's so Dan, cute, but I get it.
Dan Lewis was cut, unfortunately.
Good salutes to Dan Lewis.
And Piercedale Paladin was also cut because there was... if I was in a deck that had a higher number of equipment, I would definitely consider justifying the Piercedale Paladin, but I was trying to do the cute, like, make a bunch of blood tokens if I have Arterial Alchemy or Dan Lewis out, and then I draw a bunch of cards.
Mm-hmm.
But unfortunately, it isn't really going to be working out.
Yeah, making all those line up without, like, repeatedly tutoring is pretty difficult.
And the only tutors that I run in the deck is Gamble and the adventure part of Kellen Fae-Blooded.
Damn, son.
So, it's like, eh, gonna be able to get one equipment, or whatever. So, I cut those two, and in their place, I put in Thrall of Possibility, and I put the Runelurker Bat back in, just because Runelurker Bat actually does pretty, like, synergize pretty well with the deck. Have two keywords, have evasion, throw a Tyrian Soul Cleaver on that thing, give it a bunch of plus one counters on it, it's a good time.
That Fallout Soul Cleaver seems real good.
Yeah, cast the adventure part of Kellid Fae-Blooded. Get Tyrian Soul Cleaver.
Sounds good.
So then, you know, Fallout came out, mm-hmm. and it's the cards are awesome. A lot of the cards are awesome.
Mm-hmm.
I got to put in the land Junktown, which taps for colorless, or you could pay 4 and a red and sacrifice it to create 3 junk tokens. I have a very high affinity for the junk tokens, because I think being able to impulse draw, even if it's just on your turn, is pretty great, and eventually maybe having a payoff if you're having like an off turn with Junktown seems pretty neat.
I agree. I've always thought impulse draw was really strong.
But you also get to make 3 artifact tokens, so mm-hmm. which is also pretty sweet for the deck. I took out Othari after a very long, long consideration. And it feels bad. Othari wasn't kind of similar position to the when Adult Gold Dragon was in that slot. It just wasn't really working out. Verified threat. Everyone respected it. Could not do much with it.
Gotcha. That's unfortunate, but I get it.
So I took Othari out, and in exchange, I put in Rose Cutthroat Raider.
Yo, I've been rotating Rose in my mind.
she made the cut, and because of Veronica Dissident Scribe also got put into the deck, I'm a little more likely to hit those junk tokens, so that way you can start making the red mana off of them. Mm-hmm. Off Rose. And the other thing too, as it was discussed on give me 1 second here. I listened to another podcast which was really funny, but they were talking about making CEDH Rose. And then they're like, hey, you know, you can sack the junk tokens to Kirk Clan Ironworks so you can make 1 red and 2 colorless mana with Rose out.
Oh, shit. It doesn't care that you're sacking the junk tokens to themselves, just that they're being sacrificed.
Mm-hmm.
Really strong.
So that's pretty good. You know, hey, I got that thing in the deck, so we'll be trying that out. The Saturday games that I had with Bloodrick were pretty good. I won one and then lost the other one. Let me double check here. As usual, Wojcik Investigator and Jorkadine 1.0 pulled their weight and then some just by making clue tokens arbitrarily because we're playing red-white and we're just dumping our hand. Mm-hmm. And then Jorkadine giving +3/+0 for just having 3 artifacts out is just freaking ridiculous.
Jorkadine is the motherfucking dude.
Finally got a foil version through the mail because I was like, I finally need this in my life. And sure enough, the card looks stunning, and yeah. it's a great investment. The following day, just, hey, go from one day of a bunch of Magic to the other day of Magic, got to play Adric once, and once again encounter another person, a friend of mine who I met through work, who is just like, we're getting ready to play, and I'm like, I gotta play Adric Bloodcursed. And he's like, all right, I gotta play Hackball. Fuck Hackball. Anyway. So this is all really funny, because we're going back to the Owling Mine point earlier. Mm-hmm. So he's like, he plays with his group of friends, and he told them about my Adric Bloodcursed deck. And he's like, and the way he described it to them was that he had no idea how the deck worked.
Uh-huh.
And I'm paraphrasing the quote here. Creatures with P-words come out and stuff happens.
Mm-hmm.
Which is correct. That is the baseline rule of the deck. And to prove his point, I killed him with a Molten Psyche. We had like 15 plus cards in his hand, and he had less than that as his life total.
Get his ass.
So yeah, Molten Psyche. Good old 1/2 red. Each player shuffles their hand into their library and then draws that many cards, and then if you have Metalcraft, your opponents take damage equal to the cards that they've drawn that turn. So if you're a greedy player who likes putting a lot of cards in their hand, watch out, because I might throw out a Molten Psyche. I won, and then going back to kind of the point that I was supposed to make at the beginning. Mm-hmm. I have played 28 games of Odric Blood Cursed this year. And so far, I have won 9 of those 28 games, which approximates to about a 30% win rate so far.
Nice.
The deck is in a good spot, and it's pretty great, and I'm proving a point, and I'm having fun.
Hell yeah. I love to see the work that you are putting in be validated by the data that you've collected.
That is it for Bloodric Posting this week. What is going up with you?
All right, last thing here, I think. So I went out to the Lexicon Studio and played some games in person over there.
I did not know you did that. I was like, hey, I'm going to check out the VOD. Wait, Quinn's actually physically there.
Yeah.
What's with
that's why we posted about the lineup, but didn't specify that it was because we were going in person. So it was extremely funny.
That is very funny.
So we played my Jeskai TARDIS deck. So instead of like the War Doctor, we played First Doctor and Clara. And that is a, like the TARDIS has Plane Swak on it. So we played Plane Chase and we had Missy, our friend Sylveon Silver, who like was the remoted in, and we had her in her Missy deck, and so there were two cards that like actually mechanically interacted with the Plane Chase, so that was really cool to experience those in the fullness of their like capacity. Shout out to
we are getting out of this plane confirmed, let's go.
Yeah, there's some planes that like hardcore suck, and people were like, all right, let's roll on out of here, and then every time we get to my turn I attack with the TARDIS and we're going. And it keeps things moving. There's the goat plane, shout out to goat plane. We ended up on a plane that like added red mana to our mana pools, and you put like a charge counter on it and you add mana to your mana pool for the number of charge counters on it. And
okay,
you do that
yeah.
like every turn, and it just like increases that way. So we got up to like 8 counters on it by the time it got back around to me, and I was just like, all right, we need to get on out of here. Planeswalking with the TARDIS. And then we dipped out. And it's felt good to have that like level of control about it. There's another plane that we ended up on where you just like polymorph into a creature. So that was neat. And
there are a lot of cool planes that just like you sometimes you are going through every bat, like every terrible plane imaginable.
I think it's so important when you're playing Plane Chase to just like look your friends in the eye and say, we have a veto rule, right? And
yeah.
Everybody agrees that if a plane just absolutely fucking sucks, we bounce, no questions asked.
Yeah, I've played with Amara a few times, and the first few times that I was playing Plane Chase with her, there was just times where just like, can we just like all agree that like we need to leave? And everyone's like, yes, please. And mm-hmm. then she's like, cool, let's get the fuck out of here.
Yeah, I think there's a couple of planes that replicate effects of cards like Stasis, and it's just like, we don't need to bring that into the experience. So if we end up on one of those somehow, like that wasn't removed from the planar deck because we aren't looking for that experience, then we just act like it was removed from the planar deck and we bounce out.
Yeah, I think, you know, obviously, like, when we're looking at alternative ways of playing group Magic, having Plane Chase as an option is always great because it just adds that extra avenue to a game. And like, you can play Plane Chase with like regular kitchen table decks too, as long as like mm-hmm. everyone's in the same battlefield. But like, you know, Plane Chase Commander, you know, like
Plane Chase Commander is a whole nother level of shit.
It's all vibes based. So it's like, yeah. I don't know how many times even me and my buddies hit planes. We're just like, man, this fucking sucks. We're like, yeah, we just like, you know, just move on. Yeah, okay, cool.
Sounds good. Moving on. No questions asked.
That's just all you need.
Yeah. It's also really cool to look at the Missy card and be like, chaos on this plane doesn't suck very much, so you can draw a card and have chaos ensue. Or be like, the chaos effect here is extremely bad, so I will be taking the damage instead of having you draw a card. Like, it makes that choice have some more meaning.
Doctor Who strikes again.
Speaking of Doctor Who, another one of the decks that I played in person out there was my Esper Minigames deck with the Celestial Toymaker. That deck is always a fucking riot for me. We get to play the minigames, and playing them in person, that's just like a little bit more of a level of...
immersion, almost.
Yeah. You get to look your friends in the eye as they're making sus decisions about what piles to put things in.
They're just like shuffling the cards and just being like, which ones? I don't know. Yeah. Oh, wait, well, yeah. It's you and your Esper minigames.
It's also a burn deck, so I'm like, I'm playing these minigames with a purpose.
Yeah, fair enough. I wonder... That secret lair definitely has come out at this point, I'm pretty sure.
No, I actually do not have my Doctor or my Celestial Toymaker cards in yet.
Oh. God, I don't know what is going on. I am waiting for the Sheldon spellbook to get a confirmation of an order in, like, 3 months or however long. I can't remember when they're doing that.
Yeah, I'm waiting patiently on that. I simply put in the order and I will forget that I ordered it.
Shout out to John, aka Dark Hawkeye, for just ordering it for me and then paying for it, even though I said I would pay for it. Thanks a lot, John. It's really appreciated.
Oh yeah, shout out to that. That's the homie then.
But yeah. I'm happy to hear that you went out live. It's pretty great.
Yeah, I think
you've gone out there quite a bit in the last few months.
Yeah, that's one of the last couple of times that we're going to be able to do that. So I really wanted to make sure that we could have that in-person experience in the studio space or whatever before, things with the setup change.
Tears.
Yeah, big salutes to the studio. We absolutely adore that.
ETG Lexicon, now and forevermore. Love you. Love all of you guys.
Mm-hmm. I think that's about the end of our list, unless you had something else you wanted to bring up.
Well, so there was the one thing. I skimmed over the Caesar precon because I was just like, damn, this thing's just good out of the gate. It's pretty sweet.
Oh, I played that too. It's so good.
I'm like, oh, wow. The one game that I had with it that was just kind of memorable was that I had Caesar out. I had Kernum Autumn out, or Colonel Autumn. Mm-hmm. I had Overseer of Vault 76. Mm-hmm. And then I had Generals Enforcer out and like one other legendary creature I can't really remember.
I love Generals Enforcer. And yes, it is kind of awesome. Major MVP.
And then I was just, every time that, like, quest counters would accumulate on the Overseer, and then I would take three of them off, give all my stuff plus one counters, and then give them Vigilance, and then swing out, and everyone's like, God damn it. And I'm like, yep, just, deal with it, just keep dealing with it, and, I suffered no crackbacks. What were the notes that I put for that game? Just Generals Enforcer, kind of cracked.
Yeah. I literally, the only change that I've made to that deck is that I cut Mr. House because he does literally nothing.
He does nothing, yeah.
General Kudrow of Dranith instead.
Yeah, the human synergy right there. That's pretty good.
It's been wild fucking strong. I love the general.
You don't need to do a whole lot to that pre-con to get a lot of value out of it.
Mm-hmm. I can't even think of cards that I actively like don't like in the deck and want to cut, so I'm just like, well, I don't know how I'm going to put Trin and Silver in here.
Someone mentioned that, and I can't remember who. I think it was Steel City Steph on Twitter, mm-hmm. who was like, gave it to Steel City Brad, and then was like, this was a mistake, because I guess he has a... would you say Silvar and...
Yeah, Trin, Champion of the Free, and Silvar, Devourer of the Free.
Yeah, I guess Steel City Brad has a deck like that, and Steph was like, this is a mistake. Why did I give him the deck that basically just does the same thing? Also, I just remembered, I misread Caesar. Mm-hmm. I thought his ability was choose one. I didn't realize it was choose two. What the fuck?
So you sack your dude, you make two dudes, and then you pick another mode.
And then, yeah, no. So I definitely misplayed and still won a couple games with Caesar, but like, holy shit. Yeah, okay. I'm now will be lasering people with Caesar's last ability, which what happened to me guard. The other day. So, all right. So I was like, at first I had a whole thing that I slashed out, but I wanted to keep there just to prove the point that I actually did go through this whole thing. Mm-hmm. So originally I was like, I need to make a new deck, but how do I go about that? And I'm like, well, the Fallout just came out, and I do love Fallout. I really do. I've been pitter-pattering around a little bit in Fallout 4, like a modded Fallout 4, and I've been having a blast just kind of getting everything set up. But I'm like, all right, but right now, or at the time, I was like, I don't know which one I want to brew, because like I did get, there's a bunch of Boros Legends. Like, there's more Boros Legends than any other color combination, I think, in the set of legendary creatures. And then there was also Brotherhood of Steel Rep. But I'm like, I don't want to brew Paladin Dance or Arthur Maxson or Elizabeth Taggarty because she's from Fallout 76. And I don't really care for that. Sentinel Sarah Lyons was kind of like for consideration. But she also might be able to go in Audric Blood Curse. And I'm like, so no. Mr. House requires way too much like dice rolling investment that I'm willing to like construct a deck around. Same thing with Liberty Prime, that I would need to like get a bunch of energy card making stuff for that. I'm like, nah. And then I'm like, what works with Hero's Blade? And then I'm like, oh, I could just brew Rose, Cutthroat Raider, and make another mono red deck. And then I said, nope, I figured it out. Cause I threw Rose and Nodric. And then I'm like, I'm gonna make Craig Boone Novak Guard.
There it is.
So I took apart three decks for it, which is yay me. I'm now down three more decks, and then went up one. So I took apart my Quintorius Field Historian, and I took apart my Dejera and Hazoret deck, and I took apart my never played, didn't touch concept, basically only Audric Master Tactician deck that I didn't. I was like, I'm gonna make a deck based off my first commander deck. Didn't happen. Didn't work out. Took it apart like almost immediately. I also didn't have a spare Hero's Blade to put into this deck because holy shit. Turns out that once you get like enough evasive bodies in a Boon deck, that you just start accumulating quest counters, and then you just start lasering people.
Ooh.
So I put in some proliferate cards, and I'm going to be getting a handful of other ones, and I managed to open a Recon Craft Theta from the pack that you get with the precon. So I was like, great, that thing just happens to have proliferate on attack slapped onto it. That's pretty great.
Nice.
The highest amount of quest counters that I managed to get on Boon at one point was 11. So people at that point were like, yeah, I think the thing you're targeting is just gonna die.
Yep.
Early, yeah, so you get 2 to 4 counters on, people are like, I'll take the damage. You start hitting 10 or 11 counters, people are like, I think I'm just gonna let the thing die and you gain X much life.
Yeah, I think I'm okay.
And then, you get other cards, like, let's say you get, like, Sky Knight Vanguard, so flying evasive 2-drop that starts making bodies. Anim Pakal, Thousandth Moon.
Oh, yeah.
In the deck. And I'm not absolutely crazy. I obviously wanted to try to have, like, a bunch of cards that were from the Fallout precons, or at least had printings in them that made, like, somewhat thematic sense. But I also put in, like, Lazel Vlacket's Champion.
She's just really strong.
She's just good.
This deck, so I get it.
I put in Aurelia the Warleader, Iroas God of Victory,
my king. And I love him.
Fire Main Avenger.
Is that angel, that Lightning Helix?
Lightning Helixes on Battalion, yeah. The fact that you don't even need to attack with Boon, like, you just need at least two attacking creatures to trigger him is great. And yeah, so I was like, oh yeah, it's time to turn everyone sideways. And then someone's like, Aether Spouts. And I'm like, oh no.
Not the main deck Aether Spouts.
We thought we had to worry about, oh shoot, why am I blanking on the meme? It's so funny. Main deck.
Aetherize.
So close. Aether Spouts, Aetherize. Mm-hmm. But yeah, so yeah, I had a lot of fun with Boone the last little bit since his inception. Even within the three games that I've had with him so far, I've learned a lot about like what I want to put into it, the things I want to consider. I put Lightning Bolt in, and I also put in Intimidation Bolt, which is one white and a red for an instant that deals 3 damage to target creature. Other creatures can't attack this turn. So I do have a bit of, like, just fogs and or fog-like effects in the deck. I got Ghostly Prison just so people can't come back at me. And also, when you have a 3-3 lifelink reach guy that doesn't even need to swing out, it's pretty great. And if you put +1 counters on your stuff, it's also pretty great. So yeah, I do look forward to having a lot of fun with this deck. It's going to be really tricky to try to figure out how to get it all work together, keep Boone alive, and keep lasering people to death. I finally feel like I found a place for my foil All Will Be One.
Oh yeah, you can put counters on things and do even more burn damage with All Will Be One.
So when you start putting +1 counters and quest counters, and you proliferate Boone, All Will Be One starts saying brr. So that one was like kind of like the, I was like, this is a good place to put it, and I won't feel like I'm completely going over the top.
Yeah, that card is extremely easy to do so much with. Maybe too much.
Maybe too much, but I feel, at least for me at the moment, it feels like a okay place to put it in right now.
Yeah, this feels measured. Reasonable, even.
But yeah, I'm doing Boros things as usual. It's the fact that I took part 2 Boros decks for this is what's like brutal to me.
Listen, Hazoret and Jerry is like, I'm just glad to see less free spells in the command zone.
Yeah, they were a little bit too easy in that sense. I do love them though. Who knows? They might come up again at some point in another deck.
Yeah, I'm sure you can play them in the 99. What's their mana value? Is that an even spell?
No, it's odd. And it's like double red, white, and 2.
We'll write that down.
For Isshin, maybe?
Perhaps.
Maybe? Just maybe?
Maybe.
Alright, guess we'll see. I think that's it this time.
Alright. Well,
I think we did it. We got an hour and 15. Let's go.
Hell yeah. outro bits. Let's tell the people where they can find us and all that. All
right. Sure. Probably should have done it at the beginning, but I think the intro kind of did it. If you're listening to this, reach out to us on Twitter or on Spotify. Answer our questions. Reach out to us. Let us know your thoughts. What's going on? What are you brewing? Does it pass the Heroes Blade vibe check? Let us know. You can find me at Uncommon CMDR MTG. You can find Quinn at Girl Dick Energy, and you can find The Hub HBVC_MTG on Twitter, and then HBVC-MTG on Blue Sky, which I will need to remember to do a little more things on Blue Sky. Maybe the ship is on fire and we need to figure out what the heck is going on Twitter, what we're going to be doing.
Listen, I'm posting until they shut the bad post factory down, so that's where I'm at.
We're going down to the ship as friends, hand in hand, arm in arm. And yeah, episode, as usual, everything else is going to be in the show notes. Click away, check out what we're checking out. We'll see you next time.
Later, gamers.